account of it's behind the cataract, but the other one is a beaut. We all said hello to Bertie and moved inside to the living room where my father was in his favorite chair watching television. "This is my honey, Bertie," Grandma said to my father. My father looked over at Bertie.
"Are you going to marry her?"
my father asked.
"Not tonight," Bertie said.
My father gave up a sigh and turned back to the television. "Dinner is ready to go on the table," my mother said. "We have pot roast." We all shuffled into the dining room and took a seat. I helped my mother with the pot roast, potatoes, green beans, gravy, and red cabbage. There was red wine, beer, and a pitcher of water on the table.
"It's too bad Joseph couldn't come to dinner tonight," Grandma said. "We would all be couples."
She turned to Bertie.
"Joseph is Stephanie's boyfriend. He's a homicide detective."
"That's got to be a pretty interesting job in Trenton these days," Bertie said. "Was he assigned to the Bogart Bar murder?"
I shook my head no.
"He wasn't working that night," I said. "Stephanie was there," Grandma said. "She saw the whole thing. The Bogart Bar man fell out of the freezer truck right at her feet."
Bertie looked impressed.
"No kidding. How did you manage that?"
"I was involved in a car accident," I said. "It was a coincidence."
My father was at the head of the table, barely tolerating the conversation, waiting for the food to be passed to him. My mother always put the meat platter directly in front of him, but the rest of the food was distributed along the length of the table.
"Potatoes,"
he barked, leaning forward, knife in one hand, fork in the other. Everyone jumped in their seat, and Grandma handed him the potatoes.
"I heard another Bogart worker got frozen," Grandma said, "and it doesn't look like they have any suspects."
"It's obvious to me," Bertie said. "They should talk to Kenny Morris."
"Who's Kenny Morris?" I asked him.
"He's Moe's kid," Bertie said. "He's a regular at the bar where I work. He's got a real grudge against Bogart. Gets a snoot full, and all he can talk about is how he hates Bogart and wants to ruin him."
"Why does he hate Bogart?"
"He had a thing for Bogart's daughter. Asked her to marry him, and she turned him down. He blamed it on her father. He said her father wouldn't have her involved with a Morris."
"Gravy,"
my father said. Grandma passed him the gravy.
"That's so sad," Grandma said. "It's just like Romeo and Juliet. But instead of Romeo and Juliet dying, Romeo turned some people into popsicles."
"It seems like a stretch," I said. "Did he ever say anything that would make you think he killed the two Bogart men?"
"Not directly," Bertie said, "but he hated Bogart bars. He said they were his father's idea, and Bogart stole it, and he said he had a plan to get even. He said that a lot. Personally, I think he turned that Bogart worker into a Bogart bar to torture old Harry, and I think one day it's going to be Harry Bogart who gets dipped in chocolate and nuts."
"You should be a detective," Grandma said to Bertie. "You have this all figured out."
"People talk to bartenders and barbers," Bertie said. "Occupational hazard."
"What about the man who was frozen today?" I said. "He wasn't turned into a Bogart bar."
"Yep," Bertie said. "That presents a dilemma."
"You'll have to ask Kenny about it when you see him next," Grandma said.
My experience is that drunks aren't especially reliable. Fact and fiction tend to intermingle, stories get inflated, emotions run amok. So I wasn't going to immediately decide Kenny Morris was a killer. I wasn't going to dismiss it either. "How often does he come into the bar?" I asked Bertie.
"Couple times a week, always on Saturday night. Guess that's a low point in his week since he's not seeing the Bogart girl."
Bertie had his plate heaping with food, and he poured gravy over everything.
"This gravy rocks," Bertie said.
"The trick to good gravy is that you have to burn the meat," Grandma said. "Only on the bottom, of course. That way you get the nice dark color."
"I was married once," Bertie said. "Seems like that marriage went on forever. When you have kids, you stick it out even if it makes you sick."
"Did it make you sick?" Grandma asked.
"Gave me an ulcer. She was always talking, talking, talking."
"I don't talk all that much," Grandma said. "Mostly I watch television."
"And she couldn't cook," Bertie said. "Couldn't make gravy. Couldn't come close to this gravy."
"I bet her gravy had lumps," Grandma said.
"Yeah," Bertie said. "It had big, ugly lumps. Disgusting."
My father had his head up. The conversation was starting to interest him.
Edna is a great cook,
he said.
Some man is going to be lucky to get her. She makes French toast.
It's one of my specialties, Grandma said. I use real vanilla and a touch of nutmeg.
See, that shows you take pride in your work, Bertie said. You add that extra touch of nutmeg. I'm like that when I tend bar. Every drink is special. Like when I make a mojito, I use a mortar and pestle so I get the mint leaves just right.
Gives me goosebumps when you talk about it, Grandma said.
Me too,
my father said.
You want more pot roast, Bertie?
He looked down the table at my mother.
Maybe you need to reheat the gravy for Bertie.
Grandma jumped up. I'll do it. I'm real good at reheating.
So, Bertie,
my father said.
It sounds like you have a real job and everything. I bet you even have a house.
The wife got the house, Bertie said. I have an apartment over the bar.
I bet it's a nice apartment,
my father said. Bertie forked into his pot roast.
Suits me. I don't have far to go after work. When I want to take off, there's no maintenance to worry about.
Grandma brought the gravy to the table. That's important because Bertie's a free spirit like me.
Yep, Bertie said. That's why Edna and I get along. We understand each other. We're a couple rolling stones.
We all looked over at Grandma. She didn't usually roll very far, mostly to the bakery and the funeral home.
Bertie and I are thinking about taking a vacation on his chopper, Grandma said. We might go to Mexico.
That's a long way to go on a chopper, I said. Have you ever ridden on the chopper?
No, Grandma said, but we're going out tonight after dinner. Bertie's going to take me for a ride.
You're going to love it, Bertie said. There's nothing like it.
My mother looked into her glass. It was empty. I might need more iced tea, she said. We all stood on my parents' small front porch and watched Grandma mount the chopper in her powder blue polyester pantsuit and white tennies. She put a big black helmet on and wrapped her arms around Bertie.
Woohoo! Grandma said. Here we go!
She's going to die, my mother said. My father looked hopeful. Bertie fired up the bike, and it gave a lurch and rolled down the street. She'll be fine, I said to my mom. I didn't totally believe it, but it seemed like the thing to say.
You should follow her, my mother said.
I'll keep my eyes open for them, I told her, taking my car keys out of my messenger bag.
It was true that I would watch for them, but I wouldn't follow them. They were out of sight, and I had no idea where they were going, and I had plans of my own. I wanted to ride by Butchie's house one more time. I had my usual bag of leftovers in the crook of my arm, and my messenger bag hanging from my shoulder. I marched to my car and settled myself behind the wheel. So far, so good. No one made a parting comment on the dent. I waved to my parents as I backed out of the driveway. My father was smiling and shaking his head. My mother was grim-faced, lips pressed tight together. I sighed and drove away. It was twilight when I got back to King Street. Not yet dark enough to creep around Butchie's house and peek in his windows. I parked on the opposite side of the street, two houses down, and waited. Butchie's truck was still in his driveway. Lights were on in the front room. A light went on in another room toward the back of the house, and I guessed Butchie had gone to the kitchen. All the other houses on the street were lit, too. Traffic was minimal. Every driveway had a car parked in it. Garages in the burg were for the most part used to store items that should have been thrown away 10 years ago. Cars with dead batteries and flat tires, rusted bicycles, the sofa the dog chewed up and the cat peed on. Plus, there were lawn mowers, snow shovels, Costco economy packs of bottled water and paper products, hoses and sprinklers, and cases of motor oil. I checked in with Morelli. What's up?
I couldn't get the game in on your television, so Bob and I are at my house. Did your mom pack a leftovers bag for me?
Pot roast for sandwiches, Italian bread from the bakery, half a chocolate cake, plus some stuff in the bottom of the bag. I think she threw in some apples.
You're coming over, right?
Right. Give me a half hour. I waited 10 more minutes, left my car, and walked to Butchie's house. There were two windows on the driveway side, which was now in deep shadow, so I walked toward them. Probably bedroom windows. I stood on tiptoes and peeked in. The shades weren't drawn, but the room was dark and I couldn't see much.
I went to the garage and tested the door. Locked. I circled around to the window on the side. It had security bars on it, and the glass had been painted black. I had an instant image of a large freezer sitting inside, surrounded by empty jugs of chocolate syrup and chopped nuts. I moved on to the back of the house, crept quietly onto the back stoop, and looked in the back door window at the kitchen. Part of the room was given over to an eating area with a table and four chairs. There was a large cardboard box on the table. I couldn't see the contents. There were a couple dishes and some glasses in the dish drain by the sink. Dated electric stove and refrigerator freezer. Small toaster oven on the counter. A roll of paper towels. A loaf of supermarket bread. A jar of peanut butter. And an open package of Chips Ahoy cookies were lined up next to the paper towels. I thought to myself that Butchie kept a Spartan kitchen, and then I realized it looked a lot like mine. This dragged another sigh out of me. I left the back of the house and carefully avoided the side window in the front room. Butchie was watching television. I didn't want him catching movement on the other side of the glass. 10 minutes later, I parked in front of Morelli's house. Bob rushed at me when I walked in and knocked me against the wall. I held the food bag over my head. Morelli gave me a fast kiss and took the bag off my hands.
"You don't usually stay this long at your parents," he said, taking the bag to the kitchen.
"A guy that I worked with on the Bogart loading dock rents a house in the Berg. I wanted to look around a little." Morelli set the cake on the counter and put the rest of the bag in the fridge.
"And? Did you look around?"
"Yes. He doesn't make a lot of money, but he has an expensive truck. He parks it in the driveway, not in the garage, and the garage is locked with the window barred and painted black."
"You're talking about half the Berg. None of that is criminally unusual."
I got two forks, and we attacked the cake. "I guess that's true, but he feels off," I said. "He's too dumb, and he's too much in the right place, and he has unexplained money."
"He could be in debt up to his eyeballs."
"I ran him through the system. He's debt-free."
"So you think he's doing wet work? Connie's uncle won't be happy to learn there's a competitor."
I carved out a piece with maximum frosting. "I think it would be more like industrial sabotage."
"I'll pass this along. In the meantime, I want you to promise me you'll keep your distance."
"Sure," I said. Morelli looked at me.
"That's a fib, isn't it?"
"Pretty much." I watched him shoveling in cake. "Aren't you supposed to be avoiding gluten?"
"I'm taking probiotics, and I'm better as long as I don't get carried away."
"What about your mom's lasagna?"
"If my mother makes it, the gluten doesn't count."
"And what about this cake?"
"Your mom made it. Close enough."
I didn't want to burst his bubble, but I didn't think he was close enough at all. It seemed to me that being engaged to be engaged wouldn't count for much in the gluten protection plan. "Okay, so if it wasn't Butchie, who do you think killed the two Bogart men?" I asked him.
"I don't know, but I think this killer is psycho. Killing someone and running away from the crime is normal. Killing someone and trying to hide the crime is normal. Killing someone and making him into a Bogart bar isn't normal."
"He only did that once."
"Yeah,"
Morelli said.
"He probably ran out of chocolate."
Chapter 17. It was Saturday, and I woke up next to Morelli. This was a luxury that didn't often happen. Even when he didn't have to be at an early briefing, he was still up before the sun. He made coffee, he showered, he walked Bob, he surfed the news. This morning he was in bed, and the sun was outside, shining without him. That meant Morelli wanted something. "This is nice," I said. "You're usually long gone by the time I wake up."
"I'm trying something different."
I looked over at the bedside clock. It was 8 o'clock, and I didn't have to be at the ice cream plant until 10:30. I had time for something different. "I'm game," I told him, snuggling closer. "What did you have in mind?"
"Originally, I was going to treat you to brunch, but I've been waiting for 3 hours, and I think we might be looking at a fast cup of coffee."
I rushed into my apartment at 10 o'clock. I said good morning to Rex, gave him fresh water, and filled his cup with hamster food. I changed into clean clothes and was back in my junker car 20 minutes later. Stan Ducker was waiting for me when I screeched to a stop at the loading dock. He was suited up and standing by his jolly truck.
"They told me I had to take you with me," he said. Like my life isn't bad enough.
Sorry, I said. This wasn't my idea.
You need to get dressed. I've got an extra wig and suit for you. You can put it all on over your clothes.
Nobody said anything about getting dressed.
This is the jolly truck. If you ride in it, you gotta look like a jolly Bogart clown. I'm not supposed to give rides to down-on-their-luck bimbos.
Are you implying I'm a down-on-my-luck bimbo?
Let's just say you don't look like the Queen of England.
He hooked his thumb toward his truck.
The suit and wig are on the seat. We need to get moving. The nasty little brats are out there waiting for their booger bars.
Jeez, Louise, if this was how he started his day, what was he going to be like at the end of it? I stepped into the clown costume and tugged the wig on. Okay, I said. I'm ready to roll.
Not yet,
he said, handing me a can of red grease paint.
You gotta do the nose.
I smeared the stuff all over my nose and thought I was beginning to understand why Ducker was so grumpy. If being a clown wasn't your lifelong ambition, this wasn't the job for you. We chugged out of the parking lot and headed for North Trenton. I heard about Gus, I said. People are saying he was deliberately locked in the freezer and it looks like another murder.
I don't know about that, but I always worried about it happening to me. There was an emergency call box in there, but it broke and was never fixed. That's the way it is in this plant. Bogart cheaps out on everything. Him and his jolly, jolly, jolly crap. Everything has to look all sunshine and roses for the morons who snarf up his ice cream, but it's not so jolly inside this fucking clown costume.
You really need to find a different job. Ducker turned onto Oak Street.
Not now, sweetie pie, he said. It's finally getting to be fun. Bogart has to jolly his way through two murders. Jolly, jolly, jolly my ass.
Why do you suppose someone would want to murder Gus? He seemed like an okay guy.
Maybe the killer is just some nutcase. Gets his jollies from freezing people.
Ducker smiled.
Did you catch that? Gets his jollies?
I would expect you to be more upset.
My happy disposition is chemically enhanced.
I'm seeing a lot of that at the plant. Seriously, do you think the two murders are drug-related?
Don't know. Don't care.
He pushed a button on the dash, and the Jolly Bogart song blasted out of the loudspeakers.
Showtime,
Ducker said. We crawled along, stopping when people appeared. The drill was that Jolly would spring out of the truck, put on his happy face, and conduct business. He'd get back into the truck and mutter something about the dumb little fuckers. After an hour of this, his mood had turned even more sullen.
What time is it?
He asked me. It's almost 1 o'clock.
Damn, we're behind schedule. Hang on.
Ducker stomped on the gas. The truck chirped its tires and shot forward. He blew through a stop sign, took a corner on two wheels, and raced down Central Avenue. What's going on? Where are we going? I shouted at him.
The soccer games are over at 1 o'clock. Whoever gets a parking place by the gate gets to sell all the ice cream. The only other parking place is half a block away, and no one goes there.
Is it critical that you sell all your ice cream?
Yes. If I sell it all early, I get to go home early. I don't have to finish out the route.
He turned onto the street that ran along the playing fields, and his face got as red as his nose when he saw the Mo Morris truck parked by the gate.
Son of a bitch! That son of a bitch! He yelled. He knows that's my spot. I hate that son of a bitch!
Ducker drove past the Mo truck and gave the driver the finger, then wheeled around and parked nose to nose with him.
You're in my spot!
Ducker yelled.
Get out of my spot! I got here first, the Mo driver said. It's my spot today.
Ducker reached under his seat, hauled out a big semi-automatic, and pointed it at the driver.
You want to play Mr. Tough Guy?
The Mo driver went pale, backed his truck out of the parking space, and drove away. Ducker returned the gun to its hidey hole under his seat and got out to sell ice cream. So I'm thinking that now I might have three suspects. Ducker was a raving lunatic. He was also in the right spot at the right time. I had his employment record, but I didn't have any of his financials. I thought it wouldn't hurt to take a closer look at him. I called Connie and asked her to run a report on Stan Ducker and Kenny Morris.
Do you want me to email them to you, or do you want to pick them up here?
Connie asked.
I'll be here until 3 o'clock.
I'll pick them up. If I don't get there by 3, just leave them by the back door. Is Lula working today?
She's here at the office. I wouldn't go so far as to say she's working.
I hung up with Connie and called Eddie Gazzara.
Do you still need a babysitter for tonight? I asked him.
No, it's a wash, Eddie said.
My youngest woke up with a stomach bug and is running a fever. I'm not all that unhappy. We were supposed to go to a baby shower. I'd like to get a hold of the idiot who thought it was a good idea to have men invited to baby showers.
I murmured condolences to the youngest and congratulations to Eddie. I disconnected, swiveled in my seat, and looked out at Ducker. He was surrounded by people wanting ice cream. "Do you need help?" I asked him.
"Yeah, try to get them into a line before I get trampled."
I got everyone lined up, and Ducker collected the money and handed out the ice cream. The last person in line got the last Bogart bar. He wanted two Bogart bars, but there was only one left, so Ducker gave him a Bogart Kids Cup for free.
"Done and done," Ducker said, getting up behind the wheel.
"You sold everything?"
"We sold all the Bogart bars, and there aren't enough kids' cups left to worry about. Now we just have one more stop. I always get a lottery ticket when I'm done on Saturday. It's a ritual. I go to the deli on Beverly Street, and I get a hot dog and a lottery ticket."
I thought a hot dog and a lottery ticket sounded like a good idea. I was familiar with the deli. It was half bakery and half deli. Besides a hot dog and a lottery ticket, I could also get a fresh-filled cannoli. Ducker drove to the cross street and turned right onto Beverly. The deli was in the middle of the block, squashed between three-story row houses. Across the street was an empty lot that served as a repository for bags of trash, a discarded couch, and God knows what that lurked in the weeds and rubble of a demolished building. He parked the ice cream truck at the curb in front of the empty lot. I hiked my messenger bag onto my shoulder, and we crossed the street to the deli.
"You go ahead and get what you want," Ducker said. "I have to use the men's room."
I got a cannoli and a hot dog, and I went to the register. I bought a lottery ticket, paid for everything, and went to the door. I was about to walk outside when the truck blew up.
Ba-room!
It was a sturdy truck, but the doors flew off and the whole thing jumped a couple feet off the ground. The deli's plate glass windows rattled, and I felt the force of the explosion in my chest. An instant fireball consumed the vehicle. Clouds of black smoke billowed off the flames, and the acrid scent of burning tires penetrated the deli. I was gobsmacked. I stood frozen at the door with my hot dog in one hand and my cannoli in the other. Ducker came up beside me.
"What the fuck?"
he said. "It was sitting there all by itself, and it blew up," I said. I was actually having trouble breathing. My heart was pounding, and I was trying to push air out of my lungs. If the explosion had occurred 15 seconds later, I'd be dead. Morelli was right. I should stay far away from everything associated with ice cream.
"Someone blew up my truck," Ducker said.
He sounded stunned, but when I turned to look at him, he was grinning.
"Some son of a bitch blew up my truck,"
he said, dancing around in his clown suit.
"This is my freaking lucky day. I'm golden. I'm hot."
He stopped dancing.
"I need a lottery ticket. I gotta go buy a lottery ticket."
The clerk was the only other person in the deli, and he was flat on the floor behind the counter.
"We've been bombed," he said.
"Not exactly," I told him. "It was the ice cream truck. I think you can get up."
"I need a lottery ticket,"
Ducker told the clerk,
"and a hot dog."
I could hear sirens in the distance, and people were venturing out of houses and businesses to check out the fire. "Has it occurred to you that someone probably just tried to kill you?" I asked Ducker.
"I don't think so," Ducker said. "I'm the jolly clown. Everyone loves me. I think someone was trying to kill you. You're a bounty hunter. Everyone knows about you. And probably no one likes you. Except me. I like you a lot because you got my truck blown up."
Bummer. I called Lula and asked her to pick me up. There were police cars and fire trucks and ambulances in the street, so I told her I'd meet her at the corner. I ate my hot dog and cannoli, peeled off my clown suit, and got rid of the wig. Ducker stood in the street talking to a couple cops. I didn't see any reason for me to join in the discussion. I could give a statement some other time. So I left the deli and walked to the cross street to wait for Lula. I couldn't get the Jolly Bogart jingle out of my head. It had played on a constant loop the whole time I'd been in the truck. I looked back down the street and wondered if it was still playing Jolly, 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 Jolly. Another pleasant memory from my childhood shot to hell. I'd only been in the truck for 3 hours, but after the initial shock of the explosion wore off,
There was some relief that it had been destroyed. Lula's Firebird pulled up in front of me. I tossed the clown suit into the back and got in next to Lula.
"There's a story here," Lula said.
"I had to ride around with the Jolly Bogart clown today. We sold all the ice cream, so we stopped at the deli for a hot dog, and the truck blew up. End of story."
"Same old, same old," Lula said. "What's with the red nose?"
I put my finger to my nose, and it came away red. I flipped the visor down and looked at myself in the mirror. "Grease paint," I said. I got a tissue out of my messenger bag and scrubbed my nose. Some red grease paint came off onto the tissue, but my nose was still bright red.
"That's not attractive," Lula said. "People are going to call you Rudolph."
"I need makeup remover.
There's some at the office. I keep it there in case I need to change my look halfway through the day. Sometimes first thing in the morning I'm feeling like blue eyeshadow, and then after lunch I might want to warm up my color palette and go more to the pink tones. We can get your car and then get you fixed up."
Chapter 18. Connie was packing up to leave when we walked in.
"I have the two reports you wanted," she said. "What's wrong with your nose? It's red."
"It's more like what's wrong with her life," Lula said. "She rode around with the Jolly Clown this morning until his truck got blown up."
Connie handed the reports to me.
"Was anyone hurt?"
"No," I said. "We were in the deli on Beverly Street when it happened. Fortunately, the truck was parked in front of an empty lot, and no one was walking by when the explosion occurred. I think it must have been a bomb on a timer." I shoved the reports into my bag and went to the restroom. I used Lula's makeup remover, and I tried hand soap. My nose was still red. I dabbed concealer on it and gave it a light dusting of powder. It was toned down to a rosy glow. I returned to the office.
"This is as good as it's going to get," I said.
"It's not so bad," Lula said. "I bet if it was nighttime, you'd hardly notice it at all."
Something to look forward to.
"If you're depressed over your nose, we could do something fun like go car shopping," Lula said. "I know a guy that could fix you right up, and you wouldn't have to drive that ghetto car no more."
I stared out the window at my car. It was leaking something. "Okay," I said, "but I can't go over $5,000, and the car has to be legal. I don't want a stolen car."
"Boy, you got a lot of rules," Lula said. "I think you might have to compromise on one or the other."
"Where is this car person located?"
"Just follow me," Lula said. "He operates out of his house."
We took Hamilton to Broad, crossed the Delaware River into Pennsylvania, and headed north on River Road to Yardley. Lula turned away from the river into a wooded area, and I stayed close behind. I was hoping we got to this guy soon because I wasn't sure what was leaking from my car, and I worried what would happen when it stopped. Lula put her blinker on, and we left the road and followed a single-lane dirt drive that opened into a large field. A split-level house sat in the middle of the field. There were several cars lined up on the grass by the house. Lula found a place to park by the front door, and I pulled up alongside her. A wiry little black man with close-cropped hair and a skinny mustache looked out at us. He was wearing a red satin tracksuit and fancy basketball shoes.
"Lula," he yelled, "you looking for work?" "Hell no, you nasty-ass moron. I'm looking for a car for my friend."
He left the house, walked over to us, and gave Lula a hug. She was wearing over-the-knee boots with 5-inch heels, and when the little guy hugged her, his nose got buried in her Grand Canyon-sized cleavage.
"This is my friend Stephanie," Lula said to him. "We gotta find her a good car."
He pulled his nose out of her cleavage and turned to me.
"Gaylord Brown," he said. "It's a perfect name because I'm gay and I'm brown." "Since when are you gay?" Lula asked him. "It comes and goes," he said. "I like to keep an open mind. So what kind of car does Sugar Cookie want?" "Well, as you can see, the one she's got isn't in perfect condition," Lula said.
Gaylord looked at the car and grimaced.
"Tragic," he said. "Exactly," Lula agreed. "So she needs something right away. We don't want something leaking vital body fluids like this one, and we don't want something with a big dent in it like this one, and it would be desirable if the back seat wasn't a mold factory." "No problem so far," Gaylord said. "She works with me in the bounty hunter business, so she needs 4 doors so she can chuck the bad guys into the back seat. It could be a sedan or a SUV.
Gaylord nodded.
"Noted."
"She don't want it too old, and I ride around in it sometimes, so it should be shiny and have a good sound system."
"Goes without saying," Gaylord said.
You got a color in mind?
I'm partial to red, Lula said, but I guess we could be flexible on that one.
And how much you got to spend?
She don't want to go over 5,000.
Okay, I might have to work a little, but I might find something.
Gaylord is a specialist middleman, Lula said to me. You tell him what you want, and then he finds it for you.
Anything else? Gaylord asked.
She wants it legal, Lula said. You know, with a VIN and papers and all that shit.
All my cars come with papers, Gaylord said, and we'll make sure it has everything looking legal.
What did I tell you? Lula said to me. He's a sweetie, right?
I noticed he'd said everything would look legal, and it occurred to me that looking legal might be different from being legal. I glanced back at my SUV and gave an involuntary shiver. It would never make it back across the river. It was a miracle I'd been able to drive it this far. Okay, so he looked like a nice man. And if I harp on the legal issue, he might get insulted, right? I wouldn't want to insult one of Lula's friends. And honestly, did I even care? I gave up a sigh. Of course I cared. I didn't want to be involved in a crime, and I didn't want to encourage crime. On the other hand, I needed a car. And who was I to prejudge this businessman? What about my current car? I asked. What's it worth? Gaylord cut his eyes to the Explorer.
$50.
$50, I said. That's all you'll give me for a trade-in?
No, he said. That's what I'll charge you to haul it to the junkyard.
So when can we expect your new car? Lula asked.
I'll get Wayne working on it right away, Gaylord said. Where do you want it delivered?
You could call my cell phone and I'll let you know where we're at, Lula said.
We need full payment when we deliver, Gaylord said to me. And I only take cash. Eliminates overhead, if you know what I mean.
Oh, boy. I emptied out the Explorer, and Lula drove us back to Trenton.
Now what are we going to do? Lula wanted to know.
I need to get cash for my capture check, and my bank is closed.
No problem. I know someone who can fix that, too, if you don't mind a $25 transaction fee.
It was a little after 5 when I walked into my apartment. I dropped the envelope with $5,000 in cash onto the counter, grabbed a cold beer from the fridge, and made myself a peanut butter sandwich for dinner. Rex came out of his soup can and looked at me, whiskers twitching, eyes bright. I gave him a corner of my sandwich. He stuffed it into his cheek and scurried back into his can. I called Ranger and gave him the details on the ice cream truck explosion. I told him about Kenny Morris. I told him the jolly Bogart clown was a lunatic.
Babe, Ranger said.
Dude, I said back at him. I thought I sensed him smile, but I could be wrong. We disconnected, and Morelli called me.
Were you the second clown in the ice cream truck?
He asked. Yes.
Are you okay?
I can't get the red grease paint off my nose, but aside from that, I'm good.
Do we have a plan for tonight? Are you babysitting Gazara's kids?
Babysitting was canceled, but I have some errands to run.
Errands?
Work-related. I should be home around 11 o'clock. Also, if anyone finds a semi-automatic in whatever is left of the ice cream truck, they should run a ballistics test against the bullet taken out of Arnold Ziegler.
Are you kidding? You think the jolly Bogart clown killed Ziegler?
All I'm saying is that he had a gun, and why not test it if it turns up?
Fair enough.
I pulled the two reports out of my messenger bag and took them to my dining room table to read. There wasn't much on Ducker. He lived alone in a one-bedroom apartment in a large apartment complex in Hamilton Township. He drove a leased Kia. He had a bunch of credit cards. He had no arrest history. He was a high school graduate. After high school, he'd enlisted in the Army and served for 3 years. Never saw combat. Was unemployed for almost a year after the Army. Eventually was hired by Bogart. Never married. His parents lived in Newark. His father was a butcher. Kenny Morris graduated from Lafayette College and went to work in his father's ice cream business. He worked on the floor for a year and then moved to a corner office where he presided over the test kitchen. He'd been in the corner office for 2 years. He was 25 years old. His two older brothers weren't interested in ice cream. One was a lawyer in Philadelphia with a wife and 2 kids. The other was a graphic designer working in Silicon Valley. Kenny also had no arrest history. His credit rating was top-notch. He drove a black Jeep Wrangler Rubicon Hard Rock, which I thought was a badass car. He lived at home with his parents.
and he was in love with Bogart's daughter. Connie had included Kenny's college yearbook picture. Blonde hair, blonde eyebrows, shy smile, a little bland-looking. I opened my computer and was about to check my email when I got a call from Lula.
"Gaylord got a car for you," Lula said. "They're getting it detailed now, and then it'll get brought over to your building. Wayne's got all the paperwork, and all you gotta do is give him the money."
"What kind of car is it?"
"Dunno," Lula said. "I forgot to ask, but Gaylord said it didn't have no dents and it wasn't leaking nothing."
"I need to go to Kransky's bar in North Trenton. Do you want to tag along?"
"Sure. We were gonna do a filming, but it got canceled, so I got the night free."
Was this another Naked and Afraid episode?
"No, this was this other idea I had where I say I feel like I'm a guy today, and I go into a public men's room, and then we film my positive experience. Only problem was I did a test run this afternoon, and there were already a bunch of women in there with the men. The men were all standing back looking confused, and the women were taking selfie videos of themselves trying to use the urinals. It was a ugly scene. Those women weren't having any luck with those urinals. I like to think I'm an open-minded person, but I don't see where this whole unisex thing is going to work. It don't even make good television. I mean, if you can't make a decent reality show out of a situation, what's the point of going there?"
This was wrong on so many levels, I almost had a seizure from rolling my eyes, and yet in the end, her point was sort of valid. "I'll pick you up at 9 o'clock, I said. "Hopefully I won't have to spend a lot of time at Kransky's, because I'd like to also take another look at Butchie's house."
"What kind of bar is Kransky's? I need to know so I make the appropriate wardrobe choice."
"I've never been there, but I think it might be a small neighborhood dive. And if we get lucky and Butchie isn't home, we might try to break into his garage, so dark colors would be good." Wayne delivered my car at 7:15. He was excessively polite and neatly dressed in a 3-button collared knit polo shirt and dress slacks. He handed me an envelope with my registration and bill of sale, plus information on Bua's Takeout Chicken, Renee Nails, Fancy Dan's Detailing, and Kitty's Escort Service. "I'd like to see the car first," I said.
"Of course. Let's go take a look."
We took the stairs to the parking lot. Wayne led me over to a black Lexus GSF and gave me the keys. I was speechless for a full minute. "This is it?"
"It's not new," Wayne said. "It's a 2013, but it's in excellent condition."
"What's wrong with it?"
"It has a little scratch on the left rear quarter panel, but you can hardly see it. I know Lula said she liked red, but this car came available and Gaylord thought it suited you."
"It's hot, isn't it?" Wayne smiled, showing a lot of really white teeth.
"It will be with you in it."
"I mean, it's hot like stolen."
"Would that be a problem?"
"Yes."
"Then it's definitely not stolen."
"Good to know," I said. Crap, it was for sure stolen.
"We've attached your plates and taken care of all the title transfers. The non-stolen VIN number is displayed wherever required, and we've given you a full tank of gas."
I handed him an envelope with my $5,000 in cash.
"Enjoy," Wayne said.
A Cadillac Escalade pulled up, Wayne got in, and the SUV drove off. Little black dots floated in front of my eyes, and there was a roaring sound in my ears. I put my hand out onto the Lexus to steady myself and sucked in air. Okay, so he said it wasn't stolen, and he was very nice and neatly dressed, and he thought I'd look hot in the car. True, it was a $30,000 car that I got for $5,000, but there were reasons for the discrepancy, right? Like low overhead and sales incentives, and it had a scratch. And best not to dwell on how the title transfer was accomplished on a Saturday night. When the vertigo cleared and my breathing was more or less normal, I got into the car and drove it around the parking lot. It was a great car. And even if it was stolen, chances were good that by the time the police caught up with me, the car would already have been flattened by a cement truck. My cars didn't last all that long. Chapter 19. I dressed in black jeans, a black V-neck stretchy T-shirt, and a black hoodie. It was a perfect outfit for breaking and entering, with the exception of my nose, which was shining like Rudolph's. I told Rex I'd be home later, I hiked my messenger bag onto my shoulder, and I left my apartment. It was almost 9 o'clock, and the sun had set. I got into my new car and drove to Lula's apartment.
"Girlfriend," Lula said, "look at you. This is an excellent car. It isn't red, but it's excellent all the same."
"I think it's stolen."
"You don't know that for sure," Lula said, belting herself in. "Mostly Gaylord deals with insurance scamming. He takes a car off a lot and the insurance company pays."
"That's still stealing."
"I guess, but it's an insurance company and everyone hates those people."
"I don't hate them."
"Well, you're weird," Lula said. "Do you like the car?"
"I love the car."
"There you go. And by the way, you might want to put a dab of concealer on your nose."
Kransky's bar was on the corner of Mayberry Street and Ash. This was a neighborhood very similar to the Berg, but the houses were a little larger, the cars were newer, the kitchen appliances were probably stainless. I parked in the small lot beside the tavern, and Lula and I sashayed into the dim interior. Bertie was working behind the bar that stretched across the back of the room. A bunch of high-top tables were scattered around the front of the room. Two women sat at one of the tables, eating nachos and drinking martinis. At one end of the bar, four men were drinking beer and watching the overhead television. I spotted Kenny Morris at the other end. He was alone, nursing what looked like whiskey. Bertie caught my eye, tilted his head toward Kenny, and I nodded back.
"I guess that's the guy you're looking for," Lula said. "You want to tag-team him?"
"No, I just want to talk to him. I'll go it alone." Lula hoisted herself onto a bar stool by the four men, and I approached Kenny. "Anyone sitting here?" I asked him.
"No," he said. "No one ever sits there."
"Why not?"
"The television is at the other end."
"But you're here."
"Yeah, I'm not into the teen television thing."
He looked a lot like his yearbook photograph. His hair was a little longer. He was slim, medium height, pleasant-looking, wearing jeans and a blue dress shirt with a top button open and the sleeves rolled. He was staring at my nose with an intensity usually displayed by dermatologists during a skin cancer exam. I couldn't blame him. I'd smeared some makeup on it, but even in the dark bar, it was emitting a red glow. "It's a condition," I said. "It comes and goes. It's not contagious or anything. Do you come in here often?"
"Couple times a week."
I got Bertie's attention and ordered a glass of wine. "I was supposed to meet someone here, but I think she might be a no-show," I said to Kenny. He knocked back his drink.
"Women, that's the way they are, no-show."
Bertie brought my wine and another glass of whiskey for Kenny. "It sounds like you've had women problems," I said.
"Make that singular. One woman, no backbone, no mind of her own, has to do what her asshole father wants her to do. I can't believe I got mixed up with her and her stupid family."
"Sounds like you're still mixed up with her."
"I'm working at it."
He chugged his drink and held his finger up to Bertie for another. I had no idea where to go with this. I wasn't a brilliant conversationalist. I had no clue how to pick up a man at a bar. And here was another reminder that I sucked as Nancy Drew.
"Do you have a name?"
he asked.
"A job?"
Bam! I was back in business. "Stephanie, and I work at the Bogart Ice Creamery."
"I hate Bogart Ice Cream."
"I've only worked there a couple days."
"Well, you should quit. Bogart is evil, and his ice cream is crap. Did you know the Jolly Bogart truck got blown up today?" "Good riddance. Too bad the clown wasn't in it. That would have been good. Not as good as the guy who got turned into a Bogart bar, but still pretty good."
"I'm told they don't know who did it."
"Whoever it is, he deserves a medal. I hope more people get frozen."
"Most of the people working there are nice. Maybe not the clown, but most of the people."
"Then they should leave, because that factory is going down. Someone is out to destroy it."
"Would that be you?" I asked him.
"I wish," he said. "If it was me, I'd do it differently. I'd cut off the head, literally. And maybe I will someday."
"Bogart?"
"He should die."
"Have you ever thought about talking to someone about anger management?" Bertie brought Kenny another drink.
"Last one," Bertie said. "This is your limit. You want something to eat before I call a car for you?" "Nachos, extra cheese."
I leaned toward Kenny a little and lowered my voice. "Were you serious? Would you really cut off Bogart's head?"
"In a heartbeat."
"What's stopping you?"
"No guts. Haven't got the right sort of knife. And I faint at the sight of blood."
That got a smile out of me. I was liking Kenny Morris. From the corner of my eye, I saw Lula get off her bar stool and head for us.
"I'm trying to decide if I should order food," Lula said to me. "What do you think?"
"Is this the person you've been waiting for?"
Kenny asked. I dropped a 20 on the bar and stood. "No, we're going to go looking for her. It's been nice talking to you. I hope things work out."
"He seemed okay," Lula said. "One of them preppy individuals."
"He's having a personal problem."
"Well, we all got them. What are we doing now? Are we going to snoop around Butchie's house?"
"Yes." I drove across town, keeping my eyes open for police officers who might be under the mistaken impression that I was driving a stolen vehicle. I relaxed a little when I reached the burg without getting pulled over. Lights were off in Butchie's house. His truck wasn't in the driveway.
"Nobody home," Lula said.
I parked three houses down on the opposite side of the street, and Lula and I walked back to Butchie's house. I had a big mag light, and Lula had her purse.
"What are we looking for?" Lula asked.
"I don't know exactly. Evidence of chocolate syrup and chopped nuts, a huge freezer, bloodstains."
"The usual stuff," Lula said.
We stood across the street in front of the house for a couple minutes and watched for movement, then crossed to the driveway and went directly to the garage. It was overcast with not even a sliver of moon showing. The garage was lost in deep shadow.
"I can't see where I'm walking," Lula said. "Last time we did this in the dark, I stepped on a dead person. I still get nightmares."
I had a small penlight besides the mag light, but I didn't want to use it in the yard. Lights were on in the houses flanking Butchie's place. Last thing I wanted was for someone to call the police or send out a killer dog. We circled the garage, but didn't see a way in. There were bars on the only window, and the door was locked. I took a closer look at the front of the garage and found a keypad. I tapped in 0000, and the door opened.
"Boy, you're good," Lula said. "I would never have figured that out."
We stepped in, and I hit the button that closed the door. When the door was entirely closed, I flipped the light switch next to the garage opener, and the garage was flooded with light. One wall was lined with boxed microwave ovens. They were four boxes deep and seven boxes high, running the length of the garage. Large cartons of Nike shoes lined the other wall, and there was an island of toaster ovens.
"This boy has a lucrative sideline going," Lula said.
I looked around. "I don't see any chocolate syrup or blood."
"No, but he has a freezer."
I walked to the large chest freezer that was under the window on the side wall. It was about 5 feet long and 3 feet wide.
"Do you suppose he has another body in there?" Lula asked.
"It would have to be someone short."
"Not necessarily. You could fold him up and freeze him, and then when you take him out, you could hit him with a hammer and straighten him out."
"I wish you hadn't shared that," I said to Lula.
"Just saying."
I held my breath, opened the freezer, and we looked in. It was filled with Bogart bars.
"I'm thinking he didn't buy all these," Lula said.
"I'm thinking you're right." I was also thinking it could be the ice cream that was removed from the truck to make room for Arnold Ziegler. I closed the lid on the freezer. We took one last look around and left the garage. We walked around the house looking in windows, but it was too dark to see anything.
"Do you want to get in?" Lula asked. "I got a knack for getting in."
Her knack for getting in was to break a window or door. "No breaking in," I said. "I don't want him to know someone was snooping around." We were on the side of the house, and my heart skipped a beat when Butchie's truck drove up. He turned into the driveway and cut the engine. Lula and I froze, not sure if we'd been seen. I heard the driver's door open and close, and I held my breath. I couldn't see the driveway or the front of the house, but I heard Butchie's footsteps. He walked from the truck to the front door. The door opened and closed, and a light flashed on in the living room. A moment later, a light flashed on in the kitchen. I crept closer to the window, and I saw Butchie go to a drawer next to the sink and take out a gun.
Crap! "Feet don't fail me," Lula said,
and she took off running. I turned and took off at the same time. We reached the end of the block and ducked behind a parked car a beat before Butchie came out his front door. He looked up and down the street, walked out to the sidewalk, and looked up and down again. He wheeled around
and went back inside his house. Lula and I scurried across the street and jumped into my car. I made a U-turn and took off.
"You'll notice how I used restraint and didn't shoot him or nothing," Lula said. "Only reason I ran was because I knew that's what you wanted. Ordinarily, I wouldn't run."
"Running was the right thing to do," I said.
"I bet he's a killer," Lula said. "He's got a freezer and a gun."
I turned onto Broad Street. "He's on the list."
"Do you think he saw us?"
"He saw something, but I don't think he recognized us. It was pitch black and we were against the house." I dropped Lula off and drove home on autopilot. My cell phone rang when I pulled into my parking lot.
"Babe," Ranger said, "your car has been in Pennsylvania all afternoon, but your messenger bag has been all over the place."
"I got a new car. The old one was leaking stuff."
"Who are you visiting in the burg?"
"Butchie from the loading dock. Turns out he's got a large chest freezer and a collection of what I suspect are hijacked shoes, toaster ovens, and microwaves in his garage, and he's got a gun in his kitchen drawer."
"And the bar in North Trenton?"
"I was socializing with Kenny Morris. He's very angry."
"Does he have a gun and a freezer?"
"Dunno. It didn't come up in conversation. I suspect he has a freezer because he lives at home and his father owns an ice cream factory. Do I have an assignment for Monday?"
"I'd like you at the Bogart factory. It'll be our last day there. I have technicians working today, and on Tuesday I'll have the cameras up and running."
"There's no way I'm getting back into the clown suit."
"I'll work around it."
I said goodnight to Ranger and trudged into my apartment building and up the stairs to my apartment. Morelli was asleep on my couch. Bob was asleep on the floor beside him. Bob opened an eye and looked at me and went back to sleep. Morelli woke up and took a couple beats to focus.
"And?"
he asked. "Butchie from the loading dock has a gun."
"Cupcake, everyone you know has a gun."
He sat up and squinted at me.
"Your nose is red."
Chapter 20 Monday morning, I presented myself at the ice cream factory and was assigned to the floor. I was back at the cup dropper and filler machine. I felt comfortable doing this since it had a big red button. Three rangeman techs were on the floor adjusting and programming the newly installed cameras. Their purpose was to keep everyone safe, but I suspected their presence was a constant reminder of danger. I was relieved at 10:30, and I went to the break room for coffee. Three women were at one table and two were at another. I didn't know any of them. No one looked up and invited me to join them. The atmosphere in the room was subdued. Two murders and an explosion were taking a toll. Things were no longer so jolly. I got coffee in a candy bar and sat by myself. I didn't want to intrude on the women, and I didn't think they would tell me anything useful. Bogart's assistant Kathy found me and told me I was being reassigned to the loading dock. A truck needed loading, and they were short a man. I stripped off my yellow floor outfit and stuffed it into my locker, checked my email, grabbed my sweatshirt, and made my way to the loading dock. Butchie was packing a small truck with shrink-wrapped orders of assorted ice cream. He stopped packing and ambled over when he saw me.
"I'm guessing you're my helper," he said. "Play your cards right, and you might get to be foreman, being that I don't want this job."
"Why don't you want the job?"
"Too much work. I'm an easygoing guy. I'm a responsibility shirker."
"But for now, you're the foreman?"
"Looks that way. I got Noodles helping me load this truck, and when it gets loaded, there's a big rig coming in. Meantime, I need someone to load the jolly junker over there by the guardhouse."
I looked toward the guardhouse and saw the old, rust-riddled, faded glory Jolly Bogart truck.
"We pulled her out of retirement," Butchie said. "Bogart had her sitting on a hill looking out at Route 1 for the past 10 years, like an antique billboard. We put a new battery in her, and damned if she doesn't still run. There were some squirrels living in her, but we cleaned it all up, except for the one seat that's a little chewed."
"Who's driving it?"
"Stan's driving it."
"Does he know this?"
"I didn't talk to him personally, but someone told him to come to work, so I guess he got it figured out."
"Oh, boy."
"Anyway," Butchie said, "we got to get the old girl filled with kids' cups and Bogart bars."
"I'm not going to get locked in the freezer, am I?"
"Hard to tell around here what's going to happen next."
I grabbed the hand truck and pushed it down the hall to the freezer. I punched the code in and propped the door open with the hand truck. A lot of frigid air was rushing out of the freezer, but I didn't care. I was taking precautions. I loaded the hand truck and exited the freezer. The door closed with a click behind me, and I gave an involuntary shudder. I had the jolly truck almost filled when Stan burst out of the loading dock door. He wasn't in his clown suit, but his nose was bright red and his hair was every which way. He was waving his arms and his eyes were bugged out of his head.
"Are you freaking kidding me?"
he yelled.
"Goddamn motherfucker, holy shit and fuck me. Where is it? Where's the piece of shit truck they dragged out of hell to make my life an even worse misery?"
"By the guardhouse," Butchie said. "How come you're not in your clown suit?"
"I've been reasonable about this," Stan said. "I went out and did my job while I patiently waited. Well, no more. The gloves are off. No more jolly, jolly, jolly. You want to see jolly? Jolly fucking this."
He pulled a gun. I ducked behind the guardhouse, and he fired off about 15 rounds at the truck.
"That's wackadoodle," Butchie said to Stan when he stopped shooting.
"I hate this plant,"
Stan said.
"I hate this second-rate ice cream. I hate every shitty Bogart bar that was ever made. And I especially hate Harry fucking Bogart."
"I hear you," Butchie said, "but you should chill. You want a joint?"
"I need more than a joint,"
Stan said.
"I got some of that too," Butchie said.
Stan wheeled around and marched back into the building. "Someone should go after him and make sure he doesn't do more shooting," I said.
"He'll be okay," Butchie said. "He just had to do some venting. And besides, he emptied his clip."
Butchie lit up.
"I guess you gotta take the truck out," he said to me.
"No way.
Somebody's gotta do it."
"Not gonna be me," I said. "I'm not getting into the clown suit. I'm not smearing the grease paint on my nose. I'm not driving the truck. Suppose he decides to shoot up the truck again with me in it. And anyway, last time I went out in a Jolly Bogart truck, it got blown up."
"Yeah, but you weren't in it, so it's all good, right?"
"You take the truck out."
"I can't. I'm the foreman. I gotta stay here."
"I'll be the foreman."
"It don't work that way. Mr. Bogart gotta make you the foreman. And anyway, you'd be the fore girl." "Ha, fore girl. Who ever heard of a fore girl?"
"Okay, fine. I'll take the stupid truck out, but I'm not wearing the clown suit."
"I don't give a fig about the clown suit," Butchie said. "Personally, it always scared the holy whatever out of me."
I tossed the remaining ice cream into the truck, got my messenger bag out of my locker, stomped back to the loading dock, and climbed behind the wheel. I turned the key, and the engine sputtered and cranked over. "I'm not happy," I said to Butchie. "I'm totally not happy." I stomped on the gas, and the truck jerked forward. I drove out of the parking lot and headed for the first neighborhood. After a couple miles, the truck coughed and died. I thunked my head on the steering wheel. Why me? I got out and looked at the truck. It was leaking something. Deja vu. The story of my life. I called Lula and asked her to pick me up. I ate a Bogart bar while I waited, and I called Ranger and gave him a recap. "They recommissioned an old Jolly Bogart truck," I said. "Stan Ducker went nuts when he saw it. He emptied a clip into it and stormed off. I got stuck taking the truck out, and it broke down after a couple miles. Lula's coming to get me, but someone needs to get the truck. I don't have any numbers associated with Bogart, so I'm calling you."
"Lucky me," Ranger said.
I gave him the address, disconnected, and helped myself to another Bogart bar. 10 minutes later, Lula pulled up next to the truck.
"This here truck is full of bullet holes," Lula said.
"It had a hard morning."
"Do you got Bogart bars?"
"I have a truck filled with them."
"I'll take two. It's almost lunchtime, and I don't mind starting with dessert."
I gave Lula the Bogart bars, and we waited until the tow truck showed up. I handed over the keys and abandoned the Jolly Bogart truck.
"It's sad to see a broken-down ice cream truck full of bullet holes," Lula said. "What's this country coming to?"
I retrieved my car from the Bogart lot and followed Lula back to the bonds office.
"I ordered pizza on my way here," she said. "It should get delivered any minute now. I got an extra-large pie with the works, and I got an extra-large pie with extra cheese. I'm celebrating because I expect to hear from the Naked and Afraid people today. I could be catapulted to instant fame on that show. It's a highly rated show."
I pulled a chair up to Connie's desk, took Stan Ducker's file out of my bag, and read through it one more time.
There was nothing to indicate he was batshit crazy. I suspected it was the jolly jingle.